Hello, everyone. I'm Casey Loffman, Editor-in-Chief of Food Engineering. Thank you for joining me for the Food Engineering Podcast. My guest today is Mark DiMaggio, Vice President, Applications, Marketing, and Execution for Messer. He leads strategy, marketing, operations, and training for Messer's industries in the Americas. Mark's responsibilities include application sales, marketing strategy, financial planning, customer development and management, and engineering design and fabrication. He also manages Messer's portfolio of gas technologies in food and beverage, metals and glass, chemical and industrial applications, healthcare, and energy. Mark, thank you for joining me today.
I'm happy to be here, Casey.
And we're going to be talking today about meeting the challenges of an evolving food industry. And over the last year, obviously, the number one challenge that the industry has faced is the COVID-19 pandemic and how it has affected demand and operations. It's really touched every aspect of our lives, and especially in the food industry, it's really caused some disruptions. So what have you seen, and what has been Messer's COVID-19 response?
Absolutely. COVID impacted all of our lives, some more than others. And what we experienced in the early days, 1 year ago actually, was an immediate shift in consumer purchasing behavior. The country was closed, dining was closed, and we as consumers were forced to purchase our meals, do significantly more eating at home versus dining out. And that shift in purchasing behavior to retail caused a significant challenge to the production, because the number of the plants were not set up for that increased volume. And it's all about production line capacity, which is based on cooking, freezing, packaging capacity. So what the industry, the food industry, did was they increased the production at the retail processing plants that were currently producing products for the consumer to be purchased at retail. And they did that through increased hours. Some went 24/7. Then what they did is they looked to increase the production capacity on that line. How could they maximize production on that line? Through increased improvement in technology. And then thirdly, what they did is they began to convert other processing plants that may be producing for, let's say, institution, for the cafeterias, or for casual dining. And they began to convert those plants to retail. And then what ultimately happened is, as the country opened up slightly, we still continued to purchase at retail, we the American consumer. And then we began purchasing at quick service restaurants as they opened up. What Messer's response to the challenge was to support the existing customer base. How could we help our customers maximize productivity per line? How could we help those customers convert those plants that were typically producing for other industries to retail? We worked with our customers to add technology into a processing line that would increase freezing or chilling capacity. We did that through our leading technologies of freezing and chilling and the expertise that we have in our personnel. Our field engineering personnel have decades of experience working on the plant floors with our customers. What we also did for those plants that we're converting is provide technology in the conversion process. We quickly responded with existing inventory and increased our fabrication to support the conversion of lines to retail. And we were very, very successful. And I'm pleased to say that we helped our industry partners, our customers, our food industry customers, and we also helped the American consumer. We played a critical role there. The second challenge we experienced was in a national shortage of carbon dioxide. If you remember, we were sheltering in place The roads were quiet. We weren't driving, and we are still not driving to the pre-COVID levels. Thus, the demand for gasoline decreased significantly. A component of gasoline is ethanol. It's blended into gasoline to produce our fuel for cars. A byproduct of the production of ethanol is carbon dioxide. There are a significant number of ethanol-producing plants in the United States that have an adjacent carbon dioxide plant that takes the raw feed gas, the CO2 raw feed gas, and converts it to a liquid state that is food grade. When those plants began closing due to lack of demand, it resulted in a national shortage of carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide, along with nitrogen, are the primary cryogenic gases that help food plants produce products for the American consumer. They're involved in chilling, they're involved in freezing, and they're involved in modified atmosphere packaging. Almost every patty, whether chicken or hamburger, is chilled prior to forming. Most of our products are cryogenically crusted or frozen for preservation and increased quality prior to packaging. And then we use a blend of gases, inclusive of nitrogen and CO2, to extend the shelf life.
Right, and you know, you mentioned that's one of those unexpected domino effects. Like you mentioned, so many cars were off the road for so long that it led to less production of ethanol, which led to less production of carbon dioxide, which led to food and beverage manufacturers suddenly facing a shortage. You know, that's one of those things that until you kind of connect those dots, you never really expect. So how have you tackled that with your customers to be able to say, okay, you normally rely on CO2. It's not going to be as available as it is, but here's what we can do to help convert you over to liquid nitrogen.
We went into their plants and we created a tactical plan, really, for the conversion, looking at the existing applications and first questioning if we can convert CO2 equipment, CO2 applications to nitrogen. So we first baselined and came to a plan and understanding from an engineering perspective if the conversion was viable. And then we went into a procurement strategy to secure the necessary components for the conversion. This was in the very beginning. And the components necessary are a storage vessel, piping from the storage vessel to the point of application, and then the actual application equipment itself. Sometimes it's just a simple flow control skid and nozzles. Other times it's a full piece of equipment. And then we executed. And I'm pleased to say we executed extremely efficient. What we learned in those early days, in the months of April to June of 2020, was that there was going to be an increased breadth of these conversions. So we took our procurement team, we asked them to execute broad-based purchases of those components that we didn't have currently in stock to complete the conversion. And I may say, if we hadn't done that, and we hadn't gone to those customers, there would have been increased challenges to keep those plants operating at the increased demand for the consumer without the conversion.
Right, because that creates supply chain challenges in a couple of ways, doesn't it? Where first of all, you're trying to get the actual gas that you need, but then on your end, you're looking for these components to make sure that you have enough of those to be able to do these changeovers in a very short time frame.
That's another great point. When the conversion many times had to be done over an extended weekend. So we're physically shutting the plant down to complete the conversion. And we had to do that in a very tight window. And in doing so, it took a number of different type of supply chain logistic planning.
Okay. And then I'd like to talk about something else you mentioned there, was which was the shift in consumer demand. And we saw this odd dynamic where, as you mentioned, retail plants were suddenly running around the clock. But on the other hand, if somebody had a plant that was dedicated to, you know, institutions or food service or something like that, it was quite possibly sitting idle at the beginning of the shutdown because their business had dropped off and there might be regulatory issues or something like that that prevented that plant from serving the retail market. But as you mentioned, processors started bringing those plants back online to be able to help meet that retail demand. But that's a process in and of itself. It's not as simple as just saying, okay, this plant, we're now just going to ship everything to retail, is it?
It's not. The most challenging aspect of that, Casey, is it's twofold. It's number one, production, right? How could you get that amount of production out of the plant, out of the line to meet the demand? And then two, it's mostly around the packaging. When you go to your smaller retail stores are packaged in smaller volumes than, let's say, the big ones, the Costco's, the Sam Clubs, your major retail stores. So the most significant two challenges were the production and the packaging.
Okay, yeah, and as you mentioned, there are a couple of dual challenges there, you know, when it goes from shifting from a food service or institutional market to a retail market. You know, can you give any examples of, you know, some of the companies you worked with, even if you can't name names, obviously, about some of the specific challenges they faced and how Messer was able to help them overcome that?
Large protein processors, which produce for either retail or quick service restaurant. So these are your chicken nuggets, your chicken breasts, your chicken patties, your hamburgers. We're converting lines to support the increased demand. And we participated in their planning process extremely early. They called us in immediately with other vendors. And we worked collaboratively with the plant engineering personnel to quickly size equipment, to quickly procure that equipment when we did not have it in inventory. And then what we did is we shifted our resources from areas of the country, mostly into the Southeast, where your large protein plants were operating every single day of the week. So it was a asset management, which required significant amount of logistics and engineering design and fabrication, and then a personnel shift in our engineering technical personnel, in our project management personnel, and in our supply chain personnel. Because most, as mentioned, most of the growth was coming out of the Southeast and then secondly in the Southwest, where we have a significant amount of protein producing plants.
And then one of the other things that's been going on in the food industry over the last couple of years is, you know, to take a step back from COVID-19, is we've seen a huge rise in alternative protein and products like that. You know, so we've had so many of these new and growing markets popping up in the last couple of years, and, you know, some of them actually ended up doing very well during COVID-19 as demand surged and things like that. But as you look at those new markets, what are you seeing there, and what is Messer's role in serving those markets?
That's a great question. We're seeing a significant amount of growth in alternative protein, significant. And right now, the industry producers are not purchasing or building processing plants to produce the alternative protein product that is a consumable product, the end product for the consumer. What they're doing is they're going to existing companies and asking them to co-pack, asking them to either rent an existing processing line or in many cases, to add to a for a new processing line where space is available inside the plant. So they're buying right now, they meaning the alternative protein companies, they're buying processing time. And what we've been able to do to support that is work with our existing customers and new customers that are co-packing for the alternative protein companies and quickly install with other vendors a processing line into a new plant. I'll give you an example. We have an existing customer in Southern California, and they were approached by an alternative protein company to process thousands of pounds an hour of alternative protein burgers. They needed to be up and running in 8 weeks, 8 weeks from the initial meeting. We haven't even put pencil to paper yet. What our team did, we quickly, as mentioned with the conversions, we quickly put resources afforded to that, put pencil to paper. We engineered and sized the system to meet the demands of the customer and our customer's customer. We engineered. We had the equipment in stock. We assembled. We QC'd. We delivered. We installed. We commissioned. And we had them up and running in the available time frame. This is going to be continuing, this type of trend. However, once the industry grows, I'm envisioning that the alternative protein companies will be buying or building their own processing plants. And cryogens play a significant role, as they do in the true protein products. We will support the chilling process prior to forming. We will support any type of crusting product prior to slicing, crusting applications. We will support the freezing process to ensure quality and extend shelf life, and then of course the modified atmospheric process. So as this industry continues to grow, we will continue to support and pivot.
And that's a really interesting point that you made there about how so many of these companies don't have their own production facilities yet. And we've seen so many partnerships and so many, you know, production agreements announced and everything like that. But it probably won't be very long before we reach that tipping point where they are starting to build their own facilities, will it?
I agree with you, Casey. I think within a couple, 3 years, there's going to be opportunity that they have sufficient demand. That's what their goal is right now, to get sufficient demand so that their operating leverage is reduced and they could put a full load on a plant, that they will be building plants. Absolutely. And what we want to do is to work with the industry to build those plants, to work with them, to try to work with them so that they're building plants where there is a reliable supply of cryogens, of CO2 and nitrogen. And we're most apt to do that. We've got one of the largest networks of nitrogen in the country, as well as the largest network of CO2 in the country. So we look forward to that day, and we look forward to establishing those partnerships as we've done with the other industries in food.
And there's another really interesting market right now, which is, you know, the quick service, you know, the fast food type of restaurants. And part of that is, you know, we're starting to see so many more alternative protein offerings, you know, such as the Impossible Whopper or things like that. But then you're also seeing some new traditional protein offerings. I'm thinking of things like, you know, the Popeye's chicken sandwich that was such a sensation a while back. You know, McDonald's is now offering, you know, a new chicken sandwich, things like that. So that's kind of one of those, you know, rising tide lifts all boats things, whereas these restaurants start offering more of these options and people are still turning to those restaurants more right now, then all of a sudden the processors are finding a whole new wave of demand, aren't they?
They are. Right now, the quick service restaurant industry is doing very well, extremely well. And that is a function of a quality product, convenience, and also the fact that our nation is still not open for casual or fine dining to pre-COVID levels. And right now, you mentioned Popeyes, McDonald's followed with two new chicken sandwiches. So we're seeing the explosion of poultry processing again. It's a cyclical event that we're experiencing right now. And for those chicken sandwiches, we play an active role in the processing. And we put in a cryogen to improve the yield, because many of those sandwiches are utilizing a marinated breast. And post-marination, we come in with a proprietary technology to lock in that yield, to lock in the marinade, to lock in the freshness and the taste prior to fully freezing and packaging. And we're working with a significant number of suppliers for those two quick service companies, the Popeyes and the McDonald's, and others.
Okay. So then with all of these things in mind, all of these challenges that we've talked about and things like that, you know, it's a very interesting time to be in the food business. So when customers come to you and say, okay, these are the challenges we're facing, or these are the things that we'd like to do now, 6 months from now, a year from now, what resources do you use to evaluate their needs and then decide the best way to help them?
That's a great question. We consistently monitor trends in the marketplace. We're the leader in the world. Messer is the leader in the world in food technology and leading differentiated applications and in our personnel expertise, our technical and engineering expertise. So while we're looking at the trends, current and future, what we consistently do is to evaluate our technology portfolio first. Do we have the technologies that meet the needs of the marketplace today and in the future? And when we get called in, as you indicated, and many times we're on the plant floor working with our customers, when we identify the needs, what we quickly do is complete an assessment. What that means is saying, working with the client and asking diagnostic questions in terms of production rate, in terms of the characteristics of the product, meaning the initial temperature, final desired temperature. Are you having any challenges in quality, current or future, do you envision? And I'm very proud to be part of the Messer team. I really am. I'm very fortunate to have this type of expertise. And these guys and gals, they're on the plant floor. Many know a production line, whether it's a nugget, patty line, burger line, or other, as well as our customers do. And we work on the plant floor, partnering with our customers to engineer a solution using the inputs such as production capacity, such as the amount of heat transfer we need to remove from the product, such as if they're having a problem with yield count, how could we improve or their yield or decrease their yield loss, or if they're having a challenge meeting where they want to extend their shelf life. And we work collaboratively with them, and we engineer a solution, and then we use our team to manage the installation. We then go in and commission the equipment, and then we provide training to our customers for operating and maintaining the equipment. And it's this type of partnership and the expertise of our people and our technology portfolio that has enabled us to enjoy relationships with food processors for decades. Decades. I'm very fortunate that I could say I've been in the business more than 30 years, and I have relationships lasting that long, and we continually do business with them. It's not an equipment sale or a nitrogen or CO2 sale. It's a true partnership where we want to grow organically with our customers. And it's one that's very enjoyable, I have to say personally.
So Mark, it sounds like you have a lot of different options that you can provide for customers who are looking to solve specific challenges. But, you know, one of the challenges everybody's facing right now is there are still some restrictions on travel. It makes it hard to visit a food facility to find out what they need, or even for them to come to you. So what can you do to help out with that?
You're absolutely right, Casey. We're still experiencing some challenges traveling, specifically in states that are really not open. And some customers just don't want any outside visitors, yet have opportunities for increased growth of their business. And what we've been able to do is to leverage the Messer Technical Center. We have a technical center which allows customers to visit or to ship their product and process the product, freeze it, or chill it, utilizing our leading technologies that we're currently marketing to the food industry. And if in fact they elect not to visit, what we offer is a virtual demonstration. So we use a set of visual goggles that enable the customer firsthand, as if they're there, to witness their product being processed through our technology. And it's been very successful, and it's been a different way of doing business. Our customers are getting accustomed to it, and we are getting accustomed to it as well. A virtual processing trial, very successful. Our technical center, which is located outside of Cleveland, has both our customer experience laboratories as well as our innovation labs as well. And it's a useful tool for not solely our people, but also for our customers.
Now, is that something you see people taking advantage of in the future? I'm thinking about a scenario where, you know, someone sends you a product and then they have people from different facilities across the country all tuning in virtually, as opposed to everyone having to travel there.
Absolutely. We're doing more and more virtual selling, and it's not solely at the tech center. It's you know, on Zoom meetings or team meetings. And we've learned, as our customers have, on how to do business virtually. Personally, I find it extremely interesting and of value to witness. It's you are in our lab and you are witnessing the product being processed. So we do a complete evaluation of yield, of the actual color. Obviously we can't do taste if they're not there. However, if they were there, they could do taste and smell as well. It's extremely valuable, and I see us doing more and more of this. And Casey, I believe post-COVID, this will be a new way of conducting business. We have learned how to virtually conduct business in not solely the industrial gas and food industry, but in all industries. So I see the ways of our business now becoming more efficient and us traveling less in the future and doing more and more virtual experiences.
And it really is kind of interesting how some of these solutions that were born out of necessity, people are looking at them and saying, hey, maybe this is just a better way to do it.
Absolutely. And you mentioned solutions and innovation. It's not just about that, the way we're conducting business, but it's also about technology, innovative leading technology. I mentioned that we consistently monitor trends and we utilize those trends to keep our portfolio, our technology portfolio, fresh. And I'm very pleased that our innovation process has led us to be the number one industrial gas company supplying food products. And we do this through an innovation process where we develop new technologies or we take existing technologies and enhance them, extend the life cycle, whether it's for increased production, whether it's for lower cost, whether it's for improvement in yield. Those factors all go in to a goal of innovation and lifecycle management. I'll share with you a recent experience. roughly 5 years ago, the entire chilling market in the United States, 99% of the products being chilled prior to forming were done with CO2, carbon dioxide, 99%. Today, almost 100% of our new chilling applications are nitrogen, not CO2, nitrogen. And we're converting, as I shared with you earlier, a number of those CO2 chilling applications to nitrogen. And we have leading technology, leading in the world, unparalleled, that offers the highest efficiency, meaning the lowest cost to chill, and the highest hygiene in this application. Our cryojector nozzles are unparalleled. And what they do is they inhibit any type of water-soluble protein or food particles to enter into the nozzle. It only opens when a cryogen is flowing through it. And what this does is absolutely enhances the food safety and sanitation effort. The nozzles are not required to take apart on every sanitation shift and clean and reinstall. And this was a most successful product launch. Today, we're in a product launch right now of a wave impingement and freezer. This is taking two existing technologies, a wave freezer, which maintains a product separate from each other, such as a chicken nugget or a pizza topping, and it maintains that separate, or a wing, it maintains that separation while it's going through the freezer through a proprietary wave action, like a wave in the ocean. And then we take our impingement technology, which is the highest efficient type of freezer in the world, where it takes nitrogen vapor and increases the velocity significantly to break down the thermal barrier around the product. We currently offer an impingement freezer and a wave freezer, two freezers. We've taken the best and combined them into one that will now enable a processor that either is currently using a wave freezer or an antiquated CO2 freezer to replace it and significantly increase the production capacity at or below their current operating cost. And we're seeing a lot of great interest in the wave and pinch freezer as well. So maintaining a portfolio, a technology portfolio, and a reliable supply of gas is instrumental to the food industry. It's instrumental to Messer, it's instrumental to our customers, and it's instrumental to our customers' customers.
Great. Mark, that's all the time we have for today. So thank you for joining me and sharing your insights.
I appreciate the opportunity, Casey, and thank you.
This has been the Food Engineering Podcast with our guest, Mark DiMaggio, Vice President, Applications, Marketing, and Execution for Messer. I'm Casey Loffman, Editor-in-Chief of Food Engineering, saying thank you for listening.